Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's radio show, which is all podcasted. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and our first guest is John Adams. John writes under the title of Quilt Dad. He is an author, he is a quilter, a teacher, and a very busy man. He does a lot of different things, and I'm very excited because he has a brand new book. And so I wanted him to come on and talk about his book and talk about his fabrics, his use of fabrics and how he handles that. So hi, John, how are you?
Great, Pat. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. I have to tell people how I met you, okay?
Okay.
Because we were on a group doing these little blocks, and I had pulled all this fabric, and I needed more Heather Ross mermaid fabric that, of course, was non-existent. And you, John, were like, hey, I've got some scraps. I'm going to send them to you. And we've been best friends ever since.
That'll do it, won't it? Some Heather Ross fabric will make anyone instant best friends.
That's right. Sharing fabric that nobody can get hold of, even if it's scraps. I just love all the work that you do. You have a really wonderful sense of color and balance in your work.
Well, thanks, Pat. I appreciate that.
Now, let's first talk about your book. It's called Beyond Neutral, Quilts Inspired by Nature's Elements with Martingale, The Patchwork Place. Is this your first book?
No, actually, it's my second book under my own name. I've been part of several other books that were more compilation books. Mm-hmm. My first book was Pretty and Patchwork Holidays, which was more of a compilation book. So I compiled it, but it had projects by several other bloggers and quilters. Mm-hmm. Beyond Neutral is my first book, all of my own design. So I'm very excited about it.
Oh, my gosh. It is fantastic. Tell me a little bit about the concept, what you put together to curate the quilts that you put in here.
Great. So as I was starting to pull together the book and my initial ideas for the book, a couple of different ideas came together for me. The first one was, my style of quilts and patterns tend to be, as you might imagine, more masculine in nature. And it's not... Mm-hmm. Anything I do on purpose, it's just mm-hmm. part of who I am, I guess. And so I was getting a lot of feedback from people that they really appreciated my quilts as they were looking for things to make for the men in their lives, their husbands, their sons, their grandsons, their grandfathers. They really liked the style of quilts I was putting together because they weren't so overtly masculine. And what I mean by that is I don't use fabrics with tools on them or cars right. or mugs of beer, those more kind of expected motifs that you'd find when people say, hey, this is a great quilt for a man. Mm-hmm. I still tend to use botanics and florals and all sorts of other fabrics, but use them in a way that reads as more masculine. So that was something I wanted to highlight. The other one was people often tell me they appreciate the way I put colors and prints together. And one of the things that I like to do in my quilts is stay away from whites and creams as your traditional backgrounds. Mm-hmm. I like to use other colors, and people have often said that scares them, that they always default to using white or cream or some sort of really pale neutral as mm-hmm. their background. So what I wanted to do was highlight quilts that used other colors, blues, greens, browns, and grays as the backgrounds for the quilt. And what I found was those are colors that I pulled from nature, and I felt like if anyone knew how to use color properly and how to use neutral colors properly, it's nature. So the book kind of centered around that theme of using the neutrals and the color palettes that nature provides and breaking away from that white as a background fabric.
Oh, I love that concept. And, I hadn't really noticed that theme, but that is perfect to hear it from you because now I can see that because I've got the book here. I'm flipping through it. It's like, yeah everything has a balancing color, but it's not white or cream.
Right, and the book is broken down into parts. Instead of calling a chapter green, I went back to the nature analogy and called it grass. And instead of using the color blue, I went back to the analogy and said sky or water. So mm-hmm. really tying that together for people that these are colors that are found in nature, and then they translate really nicely into color palettes for quilts.
So why don't you walk us through how you would pull maybe one of the favorites from your book. You have to have a favorite. I know you're not supposed to, but you might. But how did you put the fabric collection together?
Yeah, so for each quilt, I kind of follow the same process I follow you know, at home when I'm making a quilt for myself or for someone in my family. I often start with a favorite fabric line, you know, and I love fabric designers and I love fabric lines because they put all the matching together for us. And so, you know, like many people, when I started quilting, I would almost exclusively use a single line of fabric. I still like to start there, maybe identify a line that I really identify with or like one or two of the prints. But then I also branch out from there to pick out others. So the process I like to follow is really finding that one print that is the star to me. I love to find a large print or something that really strikes me that I just fall in love with and build out the rest of the prints and the colors from there. Looking for more supporting players, you know, kind of keying off the colors of that main print or that large scale print, a couple of other patterns. Then I always like to throw in a couple of basics. You know what I mean by that is something that is a dot, or even if it's not literally a dot, it reads like a dot. Same thing with stripes. I like to have a stripe in there somewhere. Even some other solids or textured solids that match. I like to call those my supporting players. And then, like in a movie, you've got your lead actor and actress, your supporting players, and then your extras, right? And so I kind of go back to that philosophy when choosing my fabrics.
So if you have the pile on the table, let's say you collect it up, you have a line, you've added in some other stuff, how do you sort of pick that base color? Because particularly for this book, we'll sort of kind of keep it that focus. Yep. A lot of them have a lot of your base color, your navy or your gray or your green. How did you decide which one of those would be the focus?
You know, it's funny. I just recently taught a class a couple of weeks ago, and I was explaining this to people, and they were really surprised, and I didn't realize it was different from how many people do it, but when I was teaching the class, the first part of the class was actually shopping with people and taking them through how I would pick fabrics for a quilt and helping them do the same. So many of those people wanted to start with that solid or that background fabric as the first thing they picked. They wanted to start with that dominant color and then start picking their prints and their other fabrics from there. I actually worked the opposite way. Even though that color at the end might look dominant, it might take up a lot of the negative face of the quilt, it's actually the last thing I choose. So I like to get all my prints together, all my other fabrics together, and then decide what's that one color that's really going to set this collection off nicely. And it's often not the obvious choice. You know, if there's a collection of fabrics where it looks like it's going to be a green background because so many of the fabrics feature green, I might find that little bit of orange that ties them all together and use that. I like to save that for last because I feel like that's the best way to pick something that's going to work really well, but also might be a little unexpected.
Aha. So when we see the sort of red on the Fire Island, it didn't start out as a red quilt.
Exactly. And if you had pulled just the prints, and I think Fire Island actually uses some Cloud Nine, some beautiful Cloud Nine fabrics in there. If you had just stacked those fabrics up and didn't have your solid yet, you might choose a blue. Or you might choose, you know, there were some other colors that were a little more dominant there. But I decided that that little bit of red that was kind of the thread that tied some of them together was going to be the one I was going to pull out and use that as the element that ties all of the different fabrics together.
Yeah, I do think that that is really a neat way to do it, John, because it is a little different. People often come in with, I want to make a blue quilt, or I want to make a green quilt. And you're sort of letting, do you audition them out? Do you lay out that sort of base color and then put all the fabrics on top and move them around?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I kind of work in stacks, as I'm sure most people do, and I start pulling different fabrics and buying different fabrics and collecting them from different shops. I'll create a stack and say, these all work together for me. I want to make a quilt out of this stack. I'm known to bring that entire stack to a quilt shop and then just stand by the solid section and audition. Like you just said, I'll pull out bolts of different solids and lay all the fat quarters, all the different cuts I have on top of that solid to see if it works. You know, I trust my eyes and I trust the way that everything plays with my eye. And oftentimes I'll know in a split second, nope, that doesn't work. Nope, that doesn't work. Ooh, that kind of looks great. And I hadn't thought about using this color. I recently did that with... just last week, I was in the shop, and I brought a bunch of prints with me, and I wound up choosing this, you know, electric lime green, which I never, ever would have chosen, but again, when I put it up against the prints, it just worked.
Yeah. So let's, you know, I asked you to take a look at the American Patchwork and Quilting site and tell me what's kind of your favorite section out there. What was it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We it kind of goes along with the conversation we've been having already, but mm-hmm. You know, I often like so many of the patterns in American patchwork and quilting, but the thing that I find really fun is when they show color variations, you know? So a full quilt might be done up in a set of fabrics that I personally might not have chosen or might not be within my taste, but then I'll see the color variations and say, huh, that pattern looks completely different based on mm-hmm. a different color palette or a different style of fabrics. You know, if it was made originally in traditional and then it's done again in more contemporary fabrics or mm-hmm. Done in batiks but then done again in solids, suddenly I can see that pattern in a whole new way. I think that's a great feature. It gives quilters a lot of options and a lot of different ways to look at a quilt pattern before they decide if it's something they want to make for themselves.
Do you have a tip, John, for people to get more quilting in? Because you have a busy life. You have a busy job. You travel a lot. You aren't even home a lot. You have a pack of kids that have activities, and they're all doing things. How do you fit it in?
Yeah, I will tell you, Pat, it's not getting any easier as my children get older. So mm-hmm. I have a full-time job outside of quilting. You know, I like to call mm-hmm. sewing and quilting my super hobby. It's a little more than a regular hobby, but it's kind of my super hobby. But I do have three children. My twins are 9. My son is 8. And as they get older, like you said, the activities mm-hmm. and the sports and the soccer team and all this stuff is just getting more and more demanding on my time, all on top of my job. So, you know, my tip is I've got to keep a schedule. That's how I live my life. I've got to schedule everything out. And so I like to schedule time for myself to get into my studio and to sew and to quilt. And if I don't keep myself to that schedule, oftentimes it will not happen. So my biggest tip I tell people is I've actually kind of given up watching television.
Yeah.
I used to come home at night and after dinner and get the kids down and then you know, settle down and watch some TV. I don't do that anymore. Instead of doing that, mm-hmm. I really try to get into the studio and work on something. And for me, it's I've taken away all the pressure of, you know, I'd like to get a certain amount done tonight. You know, like, oh, I'll only be happy if I get 8 of these blocks done tonight. I take that off the table and just say, if I can sew for an hour, it's an hour. If I can sew for half an hour, that's great. As long as I can continue to sort of make progress and feel like I am exercising that creative muscle in my brain, then any little bit helps. And then, sometimes on a weekend, it was just opportunistically, I'll find a couple of hours, string together,
and there
be able
you
to
go.
Really make some big progress.
John, thanks for being here.
I appreciate it, Pat.
Visit John at quiltdad.com.
Your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's radio show, which is all podcasted. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Be sure to visit John Adams at quiltdad.com. You can pick up his book, Beyond Neutral. It's really fantastic. You're going to love it. So I love a story. I love a lot of things, you can tell. But really, a good story gets me inspired. And I'm not talking about a novel. I'm talking about a personal story. And I meet people randomly on the internet. I meet them at events that I go to. And I was writing with Judy Edgar, and she happened to mention something about her mother's quilt company that she and her family have decided to sort of bring back to life. It had been retired, the company, and they were going to bring, they had brought it back. And I'm like, whoa, this sounds really cool. So tell me about it. And I thought, all right, you have to come on and tell everybody else. So Judy is here to tell us a little bit about Kitty Comfreys, her business. So hi, Judy.
Hi, Pat. Really excited to be able to talk with you and share our little family story with you today.
Oh my gosh, this is so cool. Tell me the background of the company that your mother started, Kitty Comfreys.
Okay, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. At the time, she lived in Ontario, Oregon. My mother's an extremely creative person, and she and her family, brothers and sisters, lived during the Depression time when her mother died when she was younger than 2, and her father died at the age of 10, and these kids virtually took care of each other. And very, very close family. Mm-hmm. And, well, 3 of the sisters got together at one point when my parents had fabric stores, and 3 of the sisters became known as the So Lovely Sisters, and they had a
TV lovely
show. So Lovely Sisters. Yeah. They had a TV show where they showed sewing techniques and a lot of craft ideas. So they were really before the time of Martha Stewart, and they just they were amazing and a lot of fun, and they were always creating wonderful new ideas. And from that kind of stemmed my mother's creativity, and she, being in the fabric business, of course, was always looking for new ideas, and sewing was part of our life.
Mm-hmm. And what is your mom's name? Tell me your mom's name.
Relia Skinner.
Yeah, okay.
She began creating little quilts, of course, for grandchildren and mini-grandchildren, mm-hmm. and she had this fun idea, why not create a quilt in the shape of an animal? And mm-hmm. so she had a cat that she really liked, and so she drew this big cat out with its features and created this fun cat design. And so it's actually in the shape of a cat. And since then, it's created many cats and many, many different quilts. But that's where it started.
I want to describe this for people because I haven't seen one in person, but, you know, on my site today, you sent me pictures of your children, right? With the
grandchildren.
The oh, they're your grandchildren with the quilts. And but these quilts are big. When you say she drew a cat, she was drawing a cat the size of like a sleeping bag.
Close to that. It could fit in a crib or on a small bed.
What's the average size? They're like 40
they're approximately 42 by 54.
Wow.
So they kind of range in that area.
That's what I think is so interesting, is that her idea must have been very unique at the time to have such a large shape quilted.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. There was nothing like it. And, of course, she had a great time with creating other little animals and, of course, different animals. And then, of course, a little girl and a little boy and robots and many, many other things. So not only did she create the quilts, then they began doing the latch hook rugs that match the quilts and embroideries that match the quilts. And so they just stemmed out from there.
So when she drew this first one just for her own, you know, fun, what happened that made her create a business out of it?
Well, just the interest. People loved it. People loved the little quilts, and everybody wanted them. And so she thought, wow, well, maybe I have something here. And so she started designing other little animals. And she has a very talented sister, of course, that was with her as one of the So Lovely Sisters, who's a great artist. In fact, Neoma Heap is her name, and she designs fabrics, some well-known fabrics. That she paints and anyway, so she began to design as well. So there's my mother's designs as well as her designs, and it just stemmed from that first interest and people just going crazy over this.
Do you still have the original pattern that she drew, the original cat?
I have several. I'm not sure, actually. I haven't asked her which the original is, but I have several. She's done several different ones until she's gotten to what she prefers, you know, it's her favorite. But
Well, that is fun. So years ago, when she decided to have this as a business, it did she still have the quilt shop, and then she started a pattern business?
It was actually, we didn't call it a quilt shop, although they sold a lot of, you know, fabrics for quilts. But, yes, mm-hmm. they were still in the fabric business, and then they began selling these. They sold patterns separately, and they also created kits mm-hmm. You know, with fabric so that you could have everything you needed for your little project. And so they began to sell those, and they were just – they were so swamped and so busy. It was, of course, a small business, but they had many employees with them. But it was my parents that was running it all, and they were just running night and day. It was just flourishing and growing, yeah. and they were sending things out all over the country. And at that time, then my dad had a massive heart attack, which put a hold on everything. And because they were the only two who could really run the business, mm-hmm. they decided to let it go, and which was a heartbreak for them. There was a lot of work involved in it and mm-hmm. A lot of love in it, but they had to let it go at that time.
So I know that you brought it back, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, but let's just, I wanted to share a little bit about the actual, what the designs are. They're like, you say a cat, people can visualize a cat. And you can also go to Kitty Comfy, K-O-M-F-I-E-S, Comfies, Kitty Comfies.
Comfies.
Yeah, Comfies.com.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And so how do you put together something that's that large, like a crib quilt size? Because the shapes, like the face would be like the width of the fabric.
Right. You're creating the front. You're embroidering over the front, or you're embroidering and you're appliquing over the front. Mm-hmm.
So you have
front
like some
panel.
So you have some very large shapes that you'll be
right.
Like, the
yeah.
eyes might be the size of a bottom of a cup. I mean,
right,
they're
right, yeah. right, right. And so all of these, you'll be doing a kind of a satin stitch. We call it satin stitch. It's really just a wide zigzag that we want to use because we want mm-hmm. a finished look on both sides of the quilt.
Okay.
But, yeah, you're working with a large piece, although it's certainly workable. It's not mm-hmm. and it's not so large that you can't work with it on your machine
right.
pretty easily.
Right.
I use a lot of safety pins in my projects and at the times when I'm quilting on the machine. And
So are they fused? Mm-hmm. Are you fusing like the eyes and the bow on the bear and that kind of a thing?
I am. I fused the appliques on mm-hmm. on the front panel, which the front panel is the entire major color piece of the mm-hmm. of the quilt. And mm-hmm. then, yeah, we fuse on the appliques, and then I will usually actually do a little baste over it just to hold them in place well, unless the fusing's holding really well, mm-hmm. Because you're moving the fabric around a lot, and it's so
right.
Sometimes that can come up, and you really don't want it to. And so it's at the point where you've actually joined the back, and you turn the fabric so that all right sides are outside, and the finished mm-hmm. edges are the design, the actual image of whatever we're working on. Of course, then like, you know, just your quilting, you start pinning in place, and then you start working with doing all of your satin or zigzag stitch on the outside.
Wow, they're just so adorable. There's like hippos and squirrels and dragons and elephants mm-hmm. and mice. When did you decide that the patterns needed to come back, that the company needed to come back?
Well, I wanted to for a long time. It just kind mm-hmm. of worked out. I'm lived in Oregon for many years and have moved to St. George, Utah, where I now live, where mm-hmm. my mother lives. And it's always been her dream that one of us kids would pick up on. I have 11. I'm one of 11 children as well. Mm-hmm. And she had hoped that one of us would pick up on and take it back in because it was such loved little critters and people mm-hmm. just love them and adore them. So it's just something I've always wanted to do. I worked originally sewing samples So I sewed these. I would sew these demonstration quilts that would be sent all over the country, and they would be on display in different fabric stores. So I was very familiar with the process of making the quilts and time involved and all of those little details.
You knew how long it would take and how big the pieces were. Didn't intimidate you.
Nah.
Well, Judy, this is just so neat. Now, people, what will they find at your website? We have like about a minute or so. Tell me what's there.
Well, one major thing they'll find is instructions. If they look up on the upper toolbar, they'll see where it's instructions, and there are photo instructions, and I will be putting video instructions in. They're not there right now. They're more detailed instructions. On the pattern themselves, there are instructions, but it's more detailed on the website. They'll see, at present, we have 20 of the patterns. We have another 10 that will be coming out soon, which we're real excited to be able to get on our site, and we'll give even more variety, and we'll just continue adding. Not only do we have all of these vintage patterns, but we have some really fun ones that are coming up.
Well, I just think it is an incredible story, and I really appreciate that you could take the time out of sewing all of these and selling them to come and visit with us.
Thank you, Pat. I sure appreciate the opportunity, and I welcome anyone to our website, and also my phone information's on there, or email information. I'd be happy to respond to any request or any way that I can help.
Yeah, and if you've ever sewn one of these or had them as a child, you know, I think that would be great if you wrote Jody a note and told her.
I would love it.
Yes. Yeah,
so I'd love to hear. Love to hear from you.
Thank you, Judy.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Guess who I have next? Yes, I have Bonnie Hunter, the queen of scraps. I know, you can hear a giggle. Yes, I mean, everybody knows Bonnie. And I haven't had Bonnie come and talk with us for a while, and so I was able to catch her at home. Like John Adams, Bonnie travels a lot, so it's hard to schedule some time. So welcome to the show, Bonnie.
Welcome. I'm so happy to be here. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in and listening today. We've had a fun time up here with family, and I told everybody they had to go out on the front porch and leave me alone so that I could do this radio show.
That's right. Leave me alone for 15 minutes.
That's right.
So let's talk a little bit about scrap quilts because, you know, of course, that's what you sort of specialize in. I know you do a lot of things. You've been in business a long time, so you've made all kinds of quilts. But when you tell me a little bit about how you develop a scrap quilt, because you seem to work with themes a lot.
I do. You know, it depends on the mood I'm in, really. Mm-hmm. I will do anything from kitchen sink variety, where I'm just playing with lights versus darks, or what I like to call colors versus neutrals, where you can have in every color of the rainbow can play in that. But I also like to play with color families. And I will pick a theme for a quilt. Let's take last year's mystery, for example. We chose colors that we wanted together to represent my trip to Ireland. So I had blues and oranges and greens and yellows. Yeah, we had all those colors and neutrals. Mm-hmm. And you can put as many different fabrics within those color categories as you want, as long as it plays within that color category. And I think that playing with color categories or color families is a very easy way for somebody who wants to practice with scrap quilting and wants to get their toes wet just a little bit with scrap quilting, mm-hmm. that they can do that with comfort because they know that they already like these colors together and they know that these colors in their mind will work together. So say I have a quilt with blue.
Mm-hmm.
Any place where blue goes in that quilt, any blue can play.
And
that's kind of how I work things.
What I find most fascinating is your quilts are beautiful. You know that I love your quilts. You know,
you and I
have been buds for a long time.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think people find fascinating about your quilts, and you've done them for so long, that how do you, you know, you're very intuitive. At least it seems like you're intuitive to me. How do you help people when they look at all those different fabrics? Like you say, oh, the blue, the little diagram says put blue here. So but they're like, oh, this is light blue, that's dark blue, this is royal, that's more teal. How do you get people past that point to
you
use
know, it's,
all those?
It's not very easy, but you almost have to tell them to stop looking at the print on the fabric
mm-hmm.
because they get all hung up on what the print is, whether it's a flower or a squiggle or a leaf or a whatever, and maybe that red flower is on a blue background fabric. Stop looking at the print and look at the ground color of the fabric because that's most of the time is going to tell you where it wants to play. So
mm-hmm.
if you have a yellow fabric with red polka dots and green stars,
mm-hmm.
if you stand 6 feet away from that piece of fabric, it's going to read as yellow. So
mm-hmm.
that would go where the yellow is. But most people would kind of focus in on, no, but it has red dots. So no, so it's not a yellow. Yes, it's a yellow because of the background of the fabric. So that's the number one thing I look at.
Yeah.
The other thing I look at is how small is the piece going to be cut. When you cut some things up, and maybe I'm working with inch and a half squares that are going to finish at 1 inch, if I'm cutting from a big print, I have to be careful. Because
mm-hmm.
The print is going to cut up different in different areas. And whoops, what I thought might have been that yellow print gives me that big red flower right in the middle of my square, and now it's not going to read as yellow anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing is to look at the base of the fabric, the ground color of the fabric, and stop focusing so much on the print or the design.
You know, that's excellent. That's excellent. I tell people that when we're sorting also, just sorting. Look at your background if you don't know where you're supposed to put it.
Right.
Yeah, because I get so...
Stop looking
so,
at the sheep.
Yeah,
don't
right.
Don't look
yeah.
at the sheep on there. Look at the ground.
Right,
yeah.
It's green fabric. Now,
exactly.
Your latest book is called Leaders and Enders, More Adventures with Leaders and Enders. You're making quilts all year long for your books. And
yeah.
you travel extensively. So I thought we could talk a little bit about how you manage to sew on the road because you're pretty organized about that.
I am pretty organized about that, and I do what I call cutting parties at home. Like if my hubby is out playing tennis one night, and he's a big tennis fan, so he has tennis nights, and that's like, oh good, he's gone to play tennis. I can take the fabrics for the quilt that I'm working on, and this is exactly what I'm doing with our mystery quilt that's coming up in November. I know what units go into that quilt. I know what colors are going to go in those units. And I will take one unit, and maybe it's 9 patches, okay? And no,
mm-hmm.
there's no 9 patches in this quilt. I'm just using that off the top of my head.
We're not giving that away.
No, I will kit up all of the strips that need to go in those 9 patches, and then those will go in Ziploc baggies. And then when I am with a guild, maybe it's across country, if I'm flying, I will borrow a machine from somebody. I've given up flying with machines. I had some bad experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But I will borrow a machine, and then I will do all of the sewing of the strip sets and maybe even start to getting them cut into their individual units while I'm on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll come home with partially assembled units, and then I'll finish those. And then the next trip out, maybe it's half-square triangles, and I will have those all cut already with the triangles right sides together with each other, with the pair that they're being sewn into. So maybe my light and my dark are together in pairs. So all I have to do is feed those through the machine. And you know, it sounds like a glamorous life being a traveling quilt person. But in the evening, when you're alone in a hotel room and you're looking at 3 or 4 hours of what can I do with myself, having these pieces there and ready to feed through the machine just kind of puts a nice comfy end to my day where I just can kind of zone out and not miss my family so much when I'm on the road.
Yeah, I think that's just and is amazing to have it so organized, because your teaching schedule is very, very heavy, unlike a lot of us who, you know, have a different kind of a work style. You know, we're not on the road quite as much. I mean, you might be gone for a month.
Yeah, well, usually my trips, I try to keep things under 2 weeks, but even 2 weeks, boy, the 2 weeks, that's a half of a month gone from home. So I do what I can, but I do get a lot of sewing time done in the evenings. Mm-hmm. And here's what I find, that even at the end of the day, when I've been on my feet all day, and then you go out to dinner with the guild people or whatever it is, and we love that, and then you come back to your hotel room and you could just die. You could put your feet up and just grab the TV remote and do nothing.
Yeah.
If I force myself I'm going to sit and I'm going to sew for 20 minutes or a half hour, I'll catch my second wind. I will. And it's amazing what you can sew in a half hour if you're just chain piecing parts. You get a lot done. So I do a lot of the construction of the quilts that go in my books while I'm on the road.
And I think people could do this for other kinds of trips. You know, they might have people go on business trips. They could be hand piecing it if they don't want to, you know, have a machine, or on their vacation, so that when they, or even like, don't you think even for retreat that this could be?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. And I don't know how we ever lived without Ziploc bags, because my life is contained in Ziploc bags, all organized in my suitcase. So, yeah, but it all it takes is the drive to really want to do it. And I think if somebody were to just try it for this one trip, you know, you don't have to pack the entire queen-size quilt in your suitcase. You just take one of the units, and you have the pieces cut out, and they're in your Ziploc baggies. And if you run out of units, then you know that you're going to need to pack more next time. But it really does work, and it keeps me interested in my own projects when it seems like I am teaching the same quilt over and over and over again to my students. This gives me something exciting and new to be working on, and I can't wait to show it to people when it gets done.
I have another question that I thought that you could maybe touch on. I know in your workshops you put a big focus on the getting the accurate seam, you know, quarter-inch seam. Why do you do that? Tell me a little bit about why you do that.
Okay, I'll give you a good example.
The
so
short
let's
answer.
Say we have a Jacob's ladder block. Imagine this in your mind. Mm-hmm. And it has 4 half square triangles, and these half square triangles finish at 3 inches, okay? And then you have 5 9 patches that go one in the center and one in the 4 corners, and these are made from 1.5 inch strips, and these are also supposed to finish at 3 inches. If your seam allowance is not where it needs to be, what happens is those 9 patches shrink up more than the half square triangles will. Most people think that the half square triangle is going to be the harder unit. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's those 9 patches, because there's more seams. And if the seam is not spot on, your 9 patch is going to measure less than your half square triangles. Okay, so now we've got to square down all of these half square triangles to some ridiculous, unmeasurable measurement so that it will fit together. And then we want to put that with our pieced border or have our pieced sashings or anything. Nothing will fit. So the reason why the quarter-inch seam is so important to me is that's what we have added to the unit so that when we sew it off, we get back down to ground zero, which is the finished size of our unit. So I tell everybody, yeah, we need to work on that. And I usually have them do just a little test, because most people are bringing a classroom machine that is not their regular machine that they sew on at home. And if they don't match the seam allowance between the two machines, they're going to be in a world of panic when those blocks just turn out different sizes by using both machines. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And that's why I wanted you to share it, because I know that you do spend time doing that whenever you start a class. So I just thought
I found, I go by unit size. So I never measure the seam allowance. Don't just put a ruler down on your seam allowance and say, see, it's a quarter inch, so it's not my fault. You have to measure the unit itself, and it needs to measure the unfinished size of what it's supposed to be. So say I'm sewing with flannel.
Yeah.
Flannel is a thicker fabric, and if I've got two layers of flannel that I'm sewing through, plus the thread, the top thread and the bobbin thread, and I sew that seam and I press it over to the dark side, well, you're going to lose distance in the height of that seam because it's a thicker fabric. Mm-hmm. So I have to do a test when I'm sewing with different fabrics to make sure that my unit size is coming out the size that it needs to be. And it's worth testing for. Who wants to sew 800 triangles to them all wrong, you know?
Right.
It and test it often.
I think that that's one of the things that people don't, you know, you can sort of get off a little bit as you're working. It's always good to go back every so often and just do that test. Do some tests.
And I sew on a lot of different sewing machines. This morning, I pulled my treadle machine out onto the front porch at our cabin, and I was working on some spider web blocks out there. So I would have to test my seam allowance there, plus the seam allowance on the machine that's at home, to make sure that I'm sewing the same thing no matter which machine I'm on.
Right. What's your favorite quilt that you worked on for your newest book, More Adventures with Leaders and Enders? Which is your fave?
The favorite. Oh, my gosh. That is really hard to come up with one, because I love it. But there's a very special quilt in there that's called Lucy's Baskets.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in massage therapy school many moons ago, my girlfriend Lucy, who's also a quilter, she lives in the Netherlands, and she had this harebrained idea that we would recreate this antique quilt together. And she thought, because of the seam allowance thing, you know, she's sewing with millimeters or centimeters, whatever she's doing in the Netherlands, and I'm sewing with quarter inch here. If we cut out the block parts, we could ship little packages of block parts to each other, and then we could each do our own assembly, which kept our work consistent with ourselves. So we weren't fighting with two different people's way of doing things. And I love that quilt. It has fabrics in it from her early sewing years and old fabrics from mine when I was just getting started in the 80s. And we sent fabrics back and forth, cut out into little basket kits. And I would do the applique on the handles while I was in school for massage therapy. And then I would take those pieces and lay them by my machine. And while I was working on another project, I would slowly assemble those baskets using those instead of the folded over thread covered scrap that people sew off onto at the end. I would just use the basket parts, and they built themselves. And there's 181 of them in there. And they're
Bonnie,
all precious. Yeah.
Bonnie, this is so much fun to have you on.
Oh, thank you. It's so good to hear your voice.
I know. Yours, too. Everybody needs to visit Bonnie at quiltville.com. That's one word. And you can find all the different things that she does. Lots of fun things that you can sew along with Bonnie. So we'll have to do this again sometime. What do you think, Bonnie?
I would love it anytime you give me a call. I'm ready.
Okay. We'll schedule in for 2016.
Okay. We'll bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. We're counting on you. See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's radio. I am your host, Pat Sloan. I have Nancy Mahoney here for our July segment where we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about some quilt techniques. Nancy is a very experienced quilter and designer, author, fabric designer. So welcome back, Nancy.
Hi, Pat.
It's always fun. I love, we always chat ahead of time and we collect ideas and people write us about ideas of things that they want to know more in depth. And I think a lot of people, either on American Patchwork, Quilting Magazine's Facebook page and probably writing you in class and everything, want to know tips and tricks for saving time or saving money in our studio. What are a few top things for saving time, Nancy?
Well, one of my favorite things to do for saving time is chain piecing. I always chain piece if I can.
Do you like set it up special so that you know you can get through it?
I kind of plan it out. When I'm cutting, and that's another thing I do. When I've cut my blocks and I'm getting ready to sit down and sew my pieces together, sometimes what I'll do, and quite often what I'll do, is I'll make sure I have everything oriented with the right side facing up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, prints are hard to tell, particularly if you're working with those white-on-white prints and you have to stop mm-hmm. and you look, is this the right side or is that the right side? And you know, and you get confused, and sometimes you sew them, don't sew them together correctly, and then you have to take them apart. So I'll just take a minute, and after I've cut out my squares or cut out my triangles, whatever I've cut, and just orient them so that they're all right side facing up. And then I can sit down at my sewing machine and put those two pieces right sides together and just run them through my sewing machine, just one right after the other. And then I save thread, so I'm saving money, mm-hmm. and I'm saving time because I'm not stopping to cut the thread in between. And I know which way my pieces are oriented, so they're going through quicker.
Yeah, I have been really focused on that myself lately. I do a lot of applique, so it does that. There isn't a lot of chain piecing when you're appliquing. But when I'm doing block based, I've really gotten to, some people use like paper plates and will stack them with a block laid out. I also have like a tray. It's like a serving tray, and I will put the things on that so I can take them from the cutting table over to the sewing machine, and they're all together, so it's easier to pick them up, lay them out, move them over. And then I've showed pictures on my blog of my stacks ready to sew. But I really like the idea that you've preset them in the right direction. That is a time saver.
It really is. And if I'm sewing pieces that I have to think about, well, this edge goes next to this edge, when I put them on my next to my sewing machine, I orient them that way so that I'm not having to stop and think about which direction does this go and which seam am I, where am I supposed to sew what. It just mm-hmm. saves me a lot of time. I only think about it once, and then I can just pick each piece up and sew them together.
Now, the whole leader-ender bit, I know Bonnie Hunter talks about that a lot, so a lot of people have heard it from following her, but I think it's probably been done since the beginning of time, is that you have a piece of fabric that you can start out on. Do you create other blocks with yours? Do you use the same piece over and over?
Well, I kind of do it both ways. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I just want, I'm just sewing a few little seams, and so I'll cut up my little leftover pieces of binding into like 1-inch strips, 1-inch mm-hmm. little pieces, and then I can just run those through my machine. But if I have another project in mind, then I'll get that ready so that I can be sewing onto those squares or mm-hmm. triangles. It's a good way to use those. When we do our flip and sew methods where mm-hmm. like for flying geese or snowball blocks and you've
laid one square on top of another square and you've sewn diagonally and now you're removing that excess corner triangle and you have those little triangles left over. If you leave those right sides together and all lined up, stacked by your machine, you can run those through while you're doing your chain piecing.
Ooh.
And you're making half square triangle units as you go.
That's a free quilt. You've just made a free quilt over the years.
It really is. And there's lots of things you can do with half square triangle units, especially if you like scrappy quilts.
Yeah. And the reason why people use the leader or putting up the, when you're done, the ender, is because your threads can get sucked into the machine.
That's one of the reasons.
Yeah.
But it will also save you thread. And I see this in class a lot, and I understand it, but I see it a lot in class where people will finish a piece, they'll sew two squares together, and then they'll pull them out, and they'll use their thread cutter on their machine, and they'll end up with maybe a 3 or 4 inch tail of thread. Over the course of time of making a whole quilt, that's probably another spool of two of thread. So I just sew on to, like you said, a leader, and not only am I making a free quilt as I go, I'm saving the thread because I'm using it as I go.
Right, right. It is. It's just amazing. It takes a little bit to get in the habit of it. I've got two and a half inch squares, a whole basket of them, and I just sew them together just constantly, and I'm making 6x6 blocks out of them. And I'm doing them sort of by, I have like a light colored box, and then I have a darker fabric box. So I'm just creating these 16 patches of squares, which I'll put all together someday. But it'll be a free quilt because they were just leftover fabrics.
And you never know. Maybe, you know, what I've done sometimes is, particularly when I'm working with 30 fabrics, because 30s are so fun. You can just use any colors together, and you're doing this scrappy quilt. I have created like all these half square triangle units or these squares, four patches, and I use those to make the border on a quilt.
Ah, nice. Yeah.
So you just never know. You know, here you have something where maybe you say, these are going to be perfect for the border, or this would make a great strip on my back if I, you know, wanted to piece my backing and I just need, it's just not quite wide enough. And if I just would put a strip of squares between two pieces, my backing would then be wide enough. So there's lots of ways you can use this little bonus pieces, as I like to think of them, to create new projects.
Yeah, and that just saves you time and money. And a lot of people like to be able to use up all those little bits. They don't want to have to throw them away. So great, great, great. And I have an applique one. I do fusible applique by machine. So I'm blanket stitching my shapes. And I am the type of person who I fuse the whole thing down, as big a piece as I can handle in my machine. And I'll fuse all the shapes. And then when I go to blanket stitch, I blanket stitch by color. So I'll do all the green, all the blue, all the red. So that saves me time. I always tease in class that it's like a sweatshop because, you know, this is just the mechanics now. The fun part was cutting it out and laying it out, and now I got to stitch it down. But it's, you know, it's sort of my zen moment. I just sort of stitch. But it saves me time to go by color because it's not like hand applique where you have to worry about the layers and where you are. You can sew anywhere when you're doing it by machine. Do you have any things that you do for appliquing that are sort of a time saver?
Well, I do a very similar thing. When I'm doing fusible applique, I will do the same thing. I use one color, and I'll do that color. I'll do all of the blocks. If I'm doing stems and leaves, I do all my greens on all my blocks, and then I switch over to the next color. So it does. That really saves time when I'm doing a starch applique, which is a turned edge technique that I do, and I use invisible thread, I can actually chain stitch those.
Oh.
So I was doing some the other day that had, I was appliquing a quarter square circle on the corner of a block, similar to like a Drunkard's Path block. And so I would applique my quarter circle, and then I would just feed the next one in and applique that one. And it really saved me a lot of time. I was able to do 30 blocks in about a half hour.
Wow. That's cool. I haven't tried that one. There's just always so much great stuff out there.
Fusible. It just depends on if it's starting or and ending on the edge rather than in the center. You can't do it if it's in the center, but if it's on an edge, you can do a fusible applique too.
Now, I have one other thing I thought we'd just touch base on. I think we may have touched base a little bit on it before, but I had an interesting comment on thrifty quilting. You know, people want to find a way to, you know, maybe they're just learning, and so they don't have a lot of fabric yet. They don't maybe want to invest a lot of money. So there was some chat on my Quilt Along group at Facebook that somebody was buying either inexpensive fabrics, sale fabrics, or just clothing and using that to practice, to learn, and that, you know, maybe then they were charity quilts or whatever. But there is ways to find fabric so that you don't have to, so that you can learn and play around. Have you worked much with clothing, Nancy?
You know, Pat, I have. Back the very first quilt I made, I wanted to make, so that we're talking 39 years ago, I wanted to make my husband a quilt for Christmas. And I made him one out of blue jeans.
Oh.
I collected all of our old, you know, Levi jeans, and I even from friends said, you know, if you have any you're getting rid of, I'll take them. And I cut them up into squares, and some of them I did embroidery on, and then I sewed them all together, and it was very heavy, so I had to tie that one. But, all these years later, I still have it because denim never wears out.
Right, I was going to say, it will never wear out. You will have that denim
quilt. It will never wear out, and it's very heavy. So, it's really nice on a really cold night to snuggle up in that quilt. So it's been fun that it's been with us all these years. But it's a good way. You really can repurpose clothing. I would look for, like, men's shirts that are made. Make sure it's 100% cotton. That is the one thing I would recommend for people, is to make sure it's 100% cotton and always wash it when you get it home. I did tailoring alterations for about 12 years back in the late 70s and early 80s. And you really, I learned from that, if you're going to use clothing, really make sure you wash it, and I may even wash it more than once.
Yeah.
Because when you hit the iron, a hot iron on something that is not been washed, you'll know it.
Bad news.
Yeah.
Well, Nancy, we're out of time. I know. We'll be back in August, so we'll have some new topics to talk about. And this has been a lot of fun.
It has been. It's really fun just to chat each month with you, Pat, and to share, you know, some different ideas.
Well, visit Nancy at nancymahoney.com. Visit American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine at allpeoplequilt.com. Visit me at patsloan.com, and we will be back next week.
This is Buzz Local Radio. We had the three topics here, and we just added a fourth because we started talking about hot dogs.
Yes. Yep,
in a band.
He's in a band.
We both had guitars, so I went over to his house Christmas Day day.
We had to start a band.
And I think we wrote four or five songs that afternoon.
And Cannibalistic Fish was one of them.
Cannibalistic Fish.
I couldn't do the dreads. My mom would not let me wear my pants backwards to school either. That was wiggity-wiggity-wiggity-whack.
Buzz Local Radio. Available for free download on toginet.com.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for